Mary Roach is the author of a book called Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers. Here's Roach with a brief excerpt from her book.
The human head is of the same approximate size and weight as a roaster chicken. I have never before had occasion to make the comparison, for never before today have I seen a head in a roasting pan. But here are 40 of them, one per pan, resting face up on what looks to be a small pet food bowl. The heads are for plastic surgeons, two per head, to practice on.
Mary Roach told Anne Strandchamps what it was like to go sit in on an anatomy class.
What was most amazing to me was not so much the things I saw in the lab, but a couple of weeks after I went to the lab, I went to a memorial service for the bodies that had been used in the anatomy lab. And all of the students not only attended, but had prepared, some of them had written poems, some of them had written songs that they got up and composed. A number of students read from their journals, and it was very touching. I mean, people were choked up, people were crying. Some universities even invite the families of the cadavers to come to the memorial service. So it was very inspirational. I walked out of there thinking, I'm going to donate my body to science.
What was the first cadaver you saw?
A man who was being embalmed by a pair of embalming students at the San Francisco College of Mortuary Science. That was the first time I'd seen a cadaver other than a family member, and it was an odd situation because initially he was an anonymous man on a slab being worked on, and that had its own strangeness. But partway through, I realized that there was a card with biographical information about this gentleman, and all of a sudden he became a former person, you know, with family members and a career and a home, and it became very, very sad. And it's interesting how much of a difference there is viewing a body, an anonymous body in a lab versus the body of somebody who starts to have an identity. It really was just like flipping a switch.
You must have had this experience a lot. I mean, it's sort of appalling to think that you've seen many, many cadavers over the course of the last several years and in many places. And did your feelings about them, your reactions to them change over time?
Actually, you become desensitized to it quite quickly. For example, the second place I went was the head lab. And that was a situation where when you first walk in and you see these heads and, you know, the place where the head is cut off is not covered. I mean, it's kind of a brutal sight. And initially I thought, I don't know if I can stay in here very long. And then I was sat down with a surgeon from Canada and was speaking to this woman about, her experiences and what it was like for her and how valuable it was for her to be able to practice like this. And, every now and then I would realize, well, I'm sitting at a table as though I'm in a cafe having a cup of coffee with this woman. However, there's a severed head 6 inches from us. And it became just very matter of fact very quickly. And I was kind of surprised at that. I thought that it would take much more time to acclimatize.
It sounds as though partly what all this research gave you was a great respect for the usefulness, the practical value of the cadaver.
Absolutely. It was amazing to me. Particularly, I spent an afternoon with a beating heart cadaver. This is a person who has, say, been in a car crash where their brain is damaged to the point where they are legally dead. They are brain dead. But they're on a respirator, so their organs are being kept viable so that they can be transplanted within, there's like a 2 or 3 day window. So I saw this woman being wheeled down the hall on a respirator. So she was breathing. I mean, you could not tell that this was a dead person. She didn't look or feel. I mean, I didn't touch her, but, she would have been warm to the touch. And I saw these surgeons come in, transplant surgeons, one by one, and taking these organs, putting them in the little cooler, and then rushing off to take them to someone waiting in another town. And it was amazing to me that here was this woman who, in death, was saving 3 people's lives, or at least extending them. And I thought, what a heroic thing for somebody to be able to do that as a dead person. I mean, if I manage to do something like that as a living person, I'll be doing well. So it was very inspirational.
One of the remarkable things about your book is that it's funny. I mean, you clearly have a great sense of humor about all the places you went and all the strange things you saw. Is that appropriate? I mean, did you ever worry that this was veering from mere irreverence into the realm of tastelessness?
I did worry about that. I felt when I was writing the book as though I had looking over my shoulder everyone who had recently lost someone and, what would they think of this book and would it be, tasteless basically or offensive. But I try to make fun of myself and I do hope, anyway, that I maintained a tone of respect toward the cadavers in the book. I mean, there's a lot of funny passages in the book, but not at the expense of the bodies or their families.
So what was the funniest experience you had?
There were a couple of moments that I quite enjoyed. One was I was at the Harvard Brain Bank in Boston, and because I had at one point got it into my head that I wanted to donate my brain to Harvard, largely because you'd get a little wallet card, which you can then show to people and say, look, I'm going to Harvard. And so I decided to go visit my final resting place because I was in Boston at one point. And I'm in the lab, and there's this young guy who's got a brain, a frozen brain, and he's making some slices because they tend to take slices of the brain. They don't, you know, preserve the whole thing as in one piece. And he's cutting it, and little shards are crumbling off on the table because it doesn't slice particularly cleanly. And the little shards, the little pieces of brain, melted quite quickly. And when he took a paper towel and he wiped them up, and he smiled and he said, there goes third grade. And it was just a lovely moment that I found kind of, it was, the Harvard Brain Bank, however, didn't share my my appreciation of that moment.
What about your trip to China? That was maybe the most bizarre story in the book.
Yes, my trip to China. I was chasing down this, I saw a Reuters story about a pair of brothers in Hainan province in China, one of whom owned a restaurant and the other owned a crematorium. And as the story went, this was a Reuters story, so I thought this must be true, the guy who with the crematorium would cut off the buttocks of his customers and run them over to his brother, who owned the restaurant, who would then make them into these dumplings, which were apparently quite a hit. So I decided I was in Hong Kong anyway, and I thought, well, I'll just fly over to Hainan, which is an island, and I thought, how many crematoriums can there be there? And in fact, there were only two, and I contacted the owners of both of them, and I got an interpreter and, in fact, went to the largest crematorium there. And I don't know what I was thinking, you know, that, you know, I could sort of walk into a crematorium and sit down and say, so I understand that you, a couple years ago, you had a employee here who was hacking off the buttocks and making dumplings. So I thought maybe you could give me his phone number. So needless to say, it didn't go very well. And my poor interpreter, bless her heart, I couldn't bring myself to quite give her a full explanation of what we were about to do. So we arrive at this crematorium. I think she thought I was working for a mortuary industry magazine or something like that. And at the very last minute, I had to say, Sandy, it's about this guy who cuts off buttocks. And then the woman came in. It was a woman, very tall Chinese woman who owned the crematorium. And so she sat down and, you know, I launched into my story and Sandy, my interpreter, just nodded politely and then turned right back to the director and launched into the story. And I could see this woman over the course of the, you know, this dialogue in Chinese, I could see her just getting more and more angry. And I'm just thinking, what am I doing here? What was I thinking? So in the end, she denied everything, and I never did find the Guang brothers, and it remains a mystery.
One of the things you discovered, I guess you could call it kind of the cutting edge of cadaver research, there's a woman in Sweden who's doing some interesting work on one way to deal with human remains. Will you tell me about that?
Yes, Suzanne V. Masek is her name, and she's an environmentalist in Sweden who has come up with a method of, essentially, it's composting the human body. She comes at it from her love for the environment and her belief that we should give back to the earth. She's not in the funeral business at all. But what she's come up with, and she has the Church of Sweden on her side. She's got the support of the King of Sweden, and a majority of the Swedish population in polls have said that they like this environmental funeral, as they call it. So this is what they do. They freeze the body, deep freeze it, then they vibrate it with this vibrating machine that breaks it into little tiny pieces. Those are then dried so that they don't rot. And then they're put in a little cornstarch biodegradable coffin, which is quite small, you know, I mean, compared to a regular coffin. This is then either given to the family to put in their yard, or it goes to a memorial garden in a churchyard, and it's buried about a foot and a half so that a plant which is planted over it would actually take up the molecules of the person as they compost. You're basically composting the human body. And creating kind of a living memorial. You would have a tree or a rhododendron bush or something that you would put a little plaque on if you want to. And she's got a lot of support. She's actually talked to representatives of the Catholic Church here in the United States who have said that that would be A-OK with them.
Mary Roach is the author of Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers. She spoke with Anne Strange Champs.